Tout d'abord, une petite question, le temps que les gens arrivent. Est-ce qu'il y a des gens qui ont réussi à écouter le premier ou le deuxième cours à partir du blog? Oui, donc vous voyez, les autres qui n'ont pas réussi, vous voyez que c'est possible. OK. Voilà, donc bienvenue donc à la semaine 3. Je vais commencer. Je sais qu'il y a des gens qui ont cours juste avant à la maison du Téland, et donc ils ont une bonne raison d'arriver en retard. Hein. Mais bon, ce sont des conditions, on n'a pas le choix. Déjà, j'ai dû me battre pour avoir une salle aussi grande, je suis fier de moi. Et je vous rappelle que c'est un grand amphi, alors il me faut le silence, sinon j'arrive plus à réfléchir et je dis n'importe quoi. Okay, so last week I ended with questions of immigration and ethnic identity, which are important questions. I'm going to continue now by looking at the population in Britain from the point of view of work. How many people work in agriculture? How many people work in industry? How many people work in banks, etc.? So, could I have the next slide, please? Yeah, work, leisure, and social classes. Here you have a table, and je sais vous avez des cours avant, alors il est normal que vous arrivez un peu en retard, mais il faut arriver en silence, s'il vous plaît, merci. Here we have a table of statistics. On the left, you have the area of employment, agriculture and fishing, manufacturing, that's industry, construction, distribution, hotels and restaurants, that includes shops and supermarkets, transport and communication, telephones, lorries, buses, trains, aeroplanes, banking, finance and insurance. This can be small institutions in a small town, or the big banks of the City of London who lend millions of dollars to companies all around the world. And finally, public administration, education and health, teachers, nurses, and of course, and people who look after old people. Okay, tout le monde est installé. Excellent. If you're very good, I will sing a song at the end. So here you have the statistics, and in the middle you have the number of people working in this sector. Of course, it's not necessary to learn all the numbers, but it's important to understand which are the important, the big sectors, and which ones are not very important. And indeed, if you look at the very first one, agriculture and fishing, you have a very small number of people, not even 1%, not even 1%. In France today, you have 4% of the working population in agriculture and fishing. In Britain, in all of Britain, only 1%. And in England, even lower. It's not an agricultural country at all. We produce some milk and apples, but it's not a lot of agriculture. Manufacturing is much bigger, of course. 10%, 10.5% of workers in Britain work in manufacturing, producing cars, tables, you know, all the things we need for everyday life. And another 5% in construction. But we can see that today, the majority of people do not work with their hands in agriculture or in industry, but they work in what we call the tertiary sector, the sector tertiaire, les services, etc. For example, shops, hotels and restaurants, 24%. It has to be said that just like in France, but perhaps even more than in France, the number of people going to restaurants has risen very, very quickly. My mother and my father went to a restaurant for a wedding or a funeral. That's all. Whereas today, it's perfectly normal for ordinary working class people to go to the restaurants. For a long time in Britain, we didn't go to the restaurants, we only went to the pub. To the pubs of beer. But this is changing. The restaurants is rising, especially, of course, Indian restaurants, which are extremely popular. 6% of the population work in transport and communication. Trains, buses, still very important, buses and trains. Some aeroplanes, but Britain's not very big. So normally, if you want to go from London to Glasgow, you get the train. Whereas in France, not you and me, but business people who want to go from Paris to Marseille, they take an aeroplane. From Paris to Lyon or Paris to Brest, they take an aeroplane. In Britain, that's not so strong. But look at the last two sectors, enormous sectors. Banking, finance and insurance, 6 million people. 6 million people. Of course, some of them are big, rich bankers, but in general, they're not big, rich bankers. They're just people, secretaries, accountants who work in the banks. London is a very important banking centre for the world. If you have a German company who wants to buy insurance from a Japanese company, they probably do it in London. Yeah, London is the insurance centre. Why London? Probably the most important reason is because of the English language. When the Germans, when the French sell things to the Italians, they speak English because English is so dominant. And finally, at the end, public administration, so local government, organising schools, hospitals, etc. 27% of workers in this area. This area has got much bigger as the population has got older. Of course, when people are older, they have more health problems, and sometimes they need care. And so a large number of people working, looking after old people. Not always very well paid work, but a large number. So this is the portrait, if you like. Alors, pour ce qui est des diapos, ils vont également finir par être mis sur le blog. Ils n'ont pas encore été mis, mais ça va arriver. Quand j'arrive à la fin de tout le fichier, je vais le mettre. Oui, tout ça, oui.
Pardon?
Le tableau, il est sur
non, il sera.
Quand j'aurai fini, je suis encore dans le premier fichier PowerPoint. Quand je serai arrivé à la fin, après semaine 4, je le mettrai sur le web. Attends pour les révisions. Ok. Est-ce que vous savez baisser le projecteur un petit peu? De l'autre côté, il y a un petit. Oh, voilà, par exemple. So, of course, some people work part-time and some people work full-time, full-time and part-time, and this is the numbers. We have 7.5 million people working part-time. Now, of course, sometimes people work part-time because they prefer. But often, people work part-time because they cannot find full-time employment. And this is particularly a problem for women. Women often work part-time. So, for example, in 2008 to 2009, more than 250,000 extra people who would like to be in full-time employment have found themselves working 4 days a week or fewer. For example, in a supermarket, they say, we want people to work for us, but only 20 hours a week. This can be a big problem because if you work 4 hours a day, in reality, you are giving to the boss the best 4 hours because you work better in the first 4 hours. So that can be a difficulty. And because the economic crisis makes it difficult for everybody, sometimes instead of making people redundant, alors là on a du vocabulaire technique, to make somebody redundant, licencier quelqu'un pour raison économique. To make somebody redundant. Littéralement, prendre quelqu'un redondant. Sympa. Okay? And the noun is redundancy. We often see in the newspapers the word redundancy, licenciement, économique. Many companies are trying to avoid making people redundant. And one way to avoid making people redundant is to reduce staff hours. Everybody will work only 30 hours a week instead of 35. It's still a problem for your salary, but it's one option. Could we have the next slide, please? More statistics. I know you love statistics. This is the division of workers according to their prestige or the social classification. If you look at the bottom, you have people who have never worked for pay. Sometimes women with a lot of children have never been to work, well, have never been paid for their work. They work at home with the children. Or sometimes people who are not in good enough shape to get any work, alcoholics, drug addicts, etc. And sometimes people who are just very unlucky. We have there, so 15% of men and 22% of women had never worked for money. The reason there are more women is because of women with children deciding not to go out to work and to stay with the children. Above that, you have routine occupations. What is a routine occupation? It's a job where you only need 2 hours to learn the job. A very easy job to learn. Sometimes cleaning, if you are cleaning offices, there is no need for a long education and training to learn how to do it. Yes, routine occupations. So there is not a lot of education, and of course they're not very well paid, and they don't have much prestige. And that is about 12% of men and 10% of women. So, for example, sweeping the streets would be a routine occupation. Above that, you have semi-routine occupations. So it's not exactly so routine. For example, in a supermarket, if you are a cashier, it's fairly routine, beep, beep, but you do need some training. What do you do with the fruits? What is the code? What do you do if there's a problem? What are the security rules, etc.? That would be an example of a semi-routine occupation. And you have 10% of men and 16% of women in semi-routine occupations. When we go above that, we have technical occupations or lower supervisory. Technical occupations, for example, if you are a glazier, si vous êtes vitrier, et vous allez chez les gens remplacer les vitres cassées, il vous faut quand même quelques mois pour savoir bien le faire dans toutes les cas de figure. That would be a technical occupation, or a plumber, or many, many more jobs. For example, audiovisual technicians. And lower supervisory, alors supervisor, c'est quelqu'un qui gère le travail de plusieurs personnes. si vous êtes dans, vous travaillez dans une banque par exemple et vous êtes supervisor, savez qu'il y a 5 ou 8 personnes en dessous de vous. Vous êtes le chef de 5 à 8 personnes, donc vous n'êtes pas non plus un grand manager payé des milliards, mais ça c'est supervisory, lower supervisory. Aussi dans l'industrie, le cantonnetre, qui a quelques personnes en dessous de lui. Above that, small employers and own account workers. Alors, own account workers sont les gens qui travaillent pour eux-mêmes, les auto-entrepreneurs. And small employers, if you have a shop and you have 3 employees, then you are a small employer. Now, notice that this classification is not just about money. It is perfectly possible to have a small shop and earn less money than if you are in a technical occupation. Some people who have small shops don't earn much money at all. But it's a kind of classification of prestige. Intermediate occupations is not a very satisfactory classification. We normally think of people like nurses, les infirmières, les institutrices aussi, are counted as intermediate occupations. So they have more prestige, more stability in the job, it's more interesting. It's more interesting to be a nurse than to sweep the streets in general. Okay, unless you have very interesting streets. So these are intermediate occupations. And then we go up, lower managerial and professional occupations. So in this case, this is managers. You are a manager if you have 30 or 40 or 50 people underneath you. When it's something more important.
Sorry?
Not necessarily. You can be a manager in
No, not according to this statistical chart. Yeah, it's a technical expression. Of course, McDonald's like to use the word manager, so you feel important. But really, really, you would be a supervisor. Si vous êtes chef de service ou chef de restaurant de McDo, ça suppose qu'on est plutôt dans supervisory, because there's no manager is more money. And at the top, higher managerial and professional. Professional lawyer, doctor, university professor, who are the most important people in the world. Okay, so you see here the statistics. You notice, of course, the difference between men and women. At the very top, the most prestigious jobs, where you are really the boss, you have 15% of men and only 6% of women. Ces statistiques datent d'il y a 6 ans parce qu'en fait, ils les sortent que tous les 8 ans. Alors, dans 2 ans, je pourrais les mettre à jour, mais pour l'instant, on n'en sait rien. OK, thank you for your attention. Can I have a yes? One of the negative things about the economy in Britain is that in Britain, people work long hours, considerably longer than in France. It's true that when I talk to my friends in England, they say, 35 hours, that's wonderful. Il y a la loi sur les 35 heures, les Anglais sont très impressionnés. 13% of the working population sometimes work more than 48 hours a week. On average, a full-time employee works 44 hours a week. And so an average full-time employee. Notez bien le vocabulaire technique. Employee, ce n'est pas employé. Employee, c'est salarié. Tous les salariés, c'est des employés. Alors attention, qu'on soit ouvrier, employé, manager, on est employé. On average, an employee, a salarié, works 40.2 hours in 2009, in France 38.4. So on average, the British work 2 hours more than in France. That's quite a lot on average. 2 hours is, first of all, 2 hours is a long time. but also that means that some people work 5 hours more or 10 hours more. It's just an average. And the maximum is very high indeed. For example, the maximum legal working day is 13 hours. En France, il est illégal de dire à vos salariés de travailler 13 heures dans la journée. En Angleterre, non, c'est illégal. In France, the maximum is 10. Alors, ça peut être appliqué ou non, le legal maximum. And the minimum paid leave, congé payé, leave is the general word for congé. Sick leave, congé maladie. Maternity leave, congé maternité. Sabbatical leave, congé sabbatique. Qu'est-ce qu'on peut avoir d'autre comme leave? Paid leave, congé payé. Leaves. 24 days a year, and there are 25 in France, so fairly close to France in this particular area. Could we have the next slide, please? Thank you. Of course, the most frightening aspect of the economic crisis is unemployment. I know you are all here working very hard because you don't want to be unemployed. And for a few years in Britain, in 2000, 2003, 2004, 2005, the situation was much better in Britain. It was. For example, in 2008, the unemployment was only 5.5, which was much better than other countries. However, unemployment has been rising and is now... J'ai eu un problème de fichier parce que ça c'est une statistique que j'ai mis à jour. Alors, comment ça se fait que je suis en train de vous montrer l'ancien? C'est bizarre ça. Bon, en tout cas, j'ai vérifié, c'est maintenant 8%. En 2012, c'est 8%. Donc là, c'est marqué pour 2010, mais pour 2012, c'est 8% contre 9,6% en France. Finally, then, the question of the minimum wage. Until 1999, there was no minimum wage in Britain at all. There was no minimum. Everything was equal. But today, there is a minimum wage, but it is lower than in France. Again, in 2012, it is 7.6 euros, and in France, it is now 9 euros. Today, in France, it is 9 euros. So, that's an interesting point, that the minimum wage was introduced in France in 1968, and in Britain in 1999. So, we weren't very fast on that particular element. Can I have the next slide, please? Il ne faut pas noter trop de mots. Hein. Là, vous mettez unemployment bas, puis plus haut, et puis les chiffres d'aujourd'hui. Hein. Faut pas tout écrire. Right, okay. So, we had some information then about the economic position of different sections of the population. Let's now look at the question of social class. Now, often in France, people imagine that Britain is much more divided by class than France. I don't know if this is true or not, but it is the reputation of Britain is to be more divided by class than France. One of the difficulties is that there is no general agreement on the concept of class. Some people say the most important difference between the classes is money. Other people say, no, the most... Wow. is prestige. And other people say, no, the most important difference is education. So there is not only one answer, there are different answers. It's partly a matter of opinion. And some social scientists and some politicians say the working class is disappearing because today we don't have so many miners and railway workers and factory workers. Whereas other people say, no, the working class is changing, and if you are a secretary or you work in a supermarket or you are a primary school teacher, you are still working class. Can we have the next slide, please? So when we look at social class in the most important thing about social class is what are the questions you have to ask to decide to better understand social class. But in all your university studies, you will often discover that choosing the right question is more important than the answer. So here we have some of the questions that people ask. Does your social class depend on how much money you earn? Obviously money is important. Yeah? Does your social class depend on how much power you have at work? Are you the boss of 5 people or the boss of 10 people? Also, do you decide what you do at work? Now, my case, I'm a university professor, it's very unusual. I am the boss of nobody. I cannot decide the salaries of other workers or their promotions. On the other hand, I have a lot of control over my work. I can tell you stories about anything I want. Nobody will check. Nobody is coming to check my classes. I do what I want. I also write books. I write books on any subject I like. This is a very unusual situation. I have a lot of control over my own work. The third question, which is important when talking about class, is the subjective question. What class do you think you belong to? And this can be rather unusual, because if you take 100 nurses, si vous connaissez infirmière, and you say, what class do you belong to? 30 will say, I am working class. And another 30 will say, I am middle class. And another 30 will say, I don't know. So what can you do with this? It's not so easy to decide who is working class and who is middle class. Je fais une petite parenthèse parce que en Amérique et en Angleterre, le terme middle class a un sens radicalement différent. En Amérique, middle class, c'est tout le monde qui n'est pas riche. En Angleterre, middle class, c'est tout le monde qui ne fait pas partie de la classe ouvrière, mais pas non plus de la grosse élite. Donc c'est vraiment un sens différent. Quand Barack Obama dit middle class, il ne pouvait pas dire ça en Angleterre dans le même contexte. Ça, il y a eu une divergence d'analyse. Another question. If you want to know somebody's social class, you can ask them, what leisure activities do you participate in? Because obviously, if somebody goes to the opera, they are probably not in the same social class as somebody who goes to a football match every Saturday. Probably, but not always. What part of town do you live in? Do you live in the west? Do you live in South Kensington, the rich part of London? Or do you live in the East End? Or do you live in Manchester? Or do you live in Oxford? Of course, have you inherited wealth? Some people inherit wealth, mostly rich people. And how much? And finally, do you have stocks and shares, des actions dans les entreprises ou non? Est-ce que vous avez investisseurs. That is a question which affects the class. And last of all, what level of education do you have? Yeah. If you didn't go to university, you're probably more working class. But then today, university, we have a lot more people coming to the university. Même pas formes de Vietnam. Okay, joke. Can I have another slide, please? Only a joke. So, here are the three classes which we talk about, but remembering that the definition is partly a matter of opinion. The upper class, and traditionally in Britain for a long time, the upper class were the landowning aristocrats, the propriétaires aristocrates, for many centuries. Si vous regardez le feuilleton télé, the Tudors, you see that the elite is the aristocracy. If you look at the series Downton Abbey, again, the aristocracy are quite important. Today, however, they are less important, and industrialists and financiers are more powerful. Par exemple, la Chambre des Lords, hein, que vous savez, c'est un des deux chambres du Parlement, aujourd'hui, il n'y a plus d'aristocrates dedans. En 99, on les a virés. Hein. Il n'y a plus d'aristocrates. Tous les membres de la Chambre des Lords, aujourd'hui, sont faits lords à cause des services à la nation. Quelque chose comme la Légion d'honneur, l'honneur national. Okay. So this is a reflection of the reduction of the power of the aristocracy. There are still a few powerful aristocrats, but it's not the most important element. The working class, of course, is the biggest, and we often talk about blue-collar workers, they call it blue, working on a building site or working in a factory. But also, we use blue collar for a bus driver, traditional working class male occupations, and white collar, also say grey, white collar workers work in an office with a computer. These are not very precise divisions because we use computers in factories too these days. And so that talks about the upper class, the working class, and at the bottom, the middle class. The middle class is the most difficult to define. For example, if you think of people like nurses and primary school teachers, les institutrices, les infirmières, I think, my personal opinion, is that these people are working class. But many people say, no, they are middle class. So it is partly a question of opinion. Could I have another slide, please? Ne notez pas les noms. Hein. C'est simplement une liste. C'est les 10 personnes les plus riches en Angleterre, en Grande-Bretagne. OK? Number one, Lakshmi Mittal. He has £11,000,000. And on the right, sorry, on the third column is where did their money come from? La troisième colonne vous montre dans quel secteur de l'économie ils ont fait leur argent. Alors le tout premier, il a fait son argent en steel, acier. Okay, so that's the big one. The second guy, Abramovich, he made his money in oil and industry. And if you look, you can see that the third person on the list is an aristocrat. The sixième duc de Westminster. So there are still some rich aristocrats, and he made his money in property. So there you have the others, yes. Bertarelli, Rousing, Green. Encore un aristocrat, quand même, au sixième. Calvario and Rubin, and all making money in different ways, pharmaceuticals, food packaging, l'emballage. C'est pas très sexy l'emballage, mais si ça m'a fait 4 milliards de livres, ça ira. Retailing is shops. Retailing, c'est la vente au détail. Retailing, technical vocabulary. And of course, very important, number 7, brewing, la bière. Brasser de la bière, a very important element for Heineken. Okay, don't note all the names, that's not important. Can I have the next one, please? Okay, here we have the... Est-ce qu'il est possible de déplacer le vidéoprojecteur un petit peu vers... Voilà, wonderful. The aristocracy, as I mentioned in the past, were the most powerful elements. Until the Industrial Revolution, the aristocracy held power. They owned large land estates with a title of nobility and had a huge political influence. For hundreds of years, the Parliament was made up of the House of Commons and the House of Lords, and for hundreds of years, the House of Lords had only aristocrats in it. Aristocrats and bishops. Les aristocrates et les évêques de l'Église d'Angleterre. Okay, next please. Yeah, now, today, the aristocracy no longer has direct political power, but they still have a lot of influence. The House of Lords has seen its power decline over 100 years. First of all, in 1911, and in 1958, the power of the aristocracy in the House of Lords was reduced. In 1958, they decided that in the House of Lords, as well as the aristocracy, they would have what they call life peers. What is a life peer? Des pères à vie. A life peer is a person who becomes a lord because they are an important industrialist or a trade union leader or an important actor. Paul McCartney became a lord. These lords are named by the government. They are decided by the government. The Queen decides, but she follows the advice of the Prime Minister. So, slowly, the number of aristocrats in the House of Lords went down, and the number of people nominated by the government went up. This, of course, is much more democratic. The people in the House of Lords are not elected, but they are nominated by an elected government. So it's more democratic than the aristocratic principle. C'est un peu comme si à la place d'un Sénat élu, vous aviez un Sénat qui était composé de tous ceux qui ont reçu la Légion d'honneur, pour quelque raison que ce soit. And finally, the biggest reform is in 1999, when the votes in the House of Lords of hereditary peers, donc les aristocrates qui étaient là parce que le papa était là aussi, was eliminated. So a big democratic reform in 1999. Today, there is a debate about changing the House of Lords completely and having elections for the House of Lords. That is the present debate. And just at the bottom, a little note about the owning class and the percentages. Today, the richest 1% of the population own about a quarter of the wealth of the country. So all the riches in Britain, one quarter, 25%, are owned by 1% of the population. However, to come back to Downton Abbey, in 1914, the richest 1% had two-thirds of the riches. Now, en 1914, le 1% le plus riche possédait deux tiers des richesses de la nation. So there has been slow progress over the last 100 years. What kind of people are the owning class? What kind of people are the top of the elites? obviously senior company directors, PDG de grandes entreprises, in finance, they may be in politics, especially the Conservative Party. At present, a very large number of ministers in Britain are millionaires. C'est le pourcentage de millionnaires les plus forts dans le cabinet de ministre en Angleterre depuis 50 ans. There are lots of millionaires in there. The rich elites may be judges, ça peut être des juges ou des diplomates, or army officers, the very rich elites can have jobs in justice, diplomacy, or among army officers. And today, the royal family, of course, which is one of the most famous things about Britain, is still the symbol of this opulent class. So you probably saw the wedding of Thingy and Thingy and the other last year. The wealth is kept within the families thanks to inheritance. And usually the sons and daughters of the upper class attend the expensive, prestigious public schools, which are private, like Harrow, Eton, and Rugby. Harrow, Eton, and Rugby are the most prestigious private schools in Britain. They are extremely expensive. Notice the question of vocabulary. When you are talking about Britain, public school is a private school. Why? It's a historic piece of vocabulary. Public schools were public because they were open to all rich people and not only to priests and monks and religious people. So they were public for all rich people. Donc si on dit public schools, c'est une école privée. Alors comment on peut dire pour la conversation, comment est-ce qu'on peut dire école publique? Est-ce que quelqu'un le sait? On est obligé de dire école d'État, state school. Donc la question qu'on peut poser, si on veut être indiscret, c'est did you go to a state school or a private school? Yeah. Parce qu'on ne peut pas utiliser l'expression public school qui veut dire les écoles privées les plus prestigieuses. So state schools and private schools. This is only for Britain. In America, public school, c'est l'école publique. Normalement, c'est que les Anglais qui font les difficiles. Just a little bit of information about private schools in Britain, because people are very confused about private schools in Britain. What do you imagine is the percentage of English children who go to private schools? 30, on dit ici 30. D'autres deux, vous voulez bien deviner combien des enfants anglais vont à l'école privée? 20, 90, 90, 10? Bref, vous n'avez pas la moindre idée. Ok, good. 7%. 7%. Ok, alors comment ça se fait que tout le monde en France pense qu'il y en a beaucoup plus? C'est à cause de Harry Potter, surtout. Si. La visibilité des écoles privées est très forte. No, it's very easy to explain. C'est pas une question d'uniforme parce que les écoles publiques et oui, les écoles publiques et privées ont l'uniforme, mais c'est vrai que quand on voit les uniformes partout, on se dit que ça doit être privé. Good point. Yeah. The reason is very simple. If you go in France, if you go to a private school, you don't always. It's not necessarily very, very expensive. It's possible to go to a private school for €1,000 a year, €2,000 a year. And the reason is that often the teachers receive their salary from the government. However, in Britain, puisque c'est un pays laïque, in Britain, if you go to a private school, you must pay all the costs. If you go to a private school, you pay the salary of the teachers, and everything. So, to go to a private school in Britain costs €20,000 a year, €30,000 a year. Very, very expensive. And so, of course, only 7% of the population go to a private school. There is another reason. In France, if you want your children to have a religious education at school, you are obliged to go to a private school. Whereas in Britain, all the schools have religion in them, state schools as well. So it's not the same situation. But it's interesting to see that only 7% of British children go to private schools. We are still talking about the elite, the owning class, who like to send their children to expensive, prestigious schools, and then if they're clever enough, they go to Oxford or Cambridge, and of course they can find success through family, friends and networks. If we look at leisure, there are certain leisure activities which are the special domain of the rich elites. Fox hunting, for a long time fox hunting was important to the aristocracy and the rich. Polo also, this is still legal and very popular. And of course, certain social events of the year, such as Ascot. Ascot is an event every year, especially for the most prestigious. Next slide, please. There you have some pictures. So you have the fox hunting at the top and on the left. And here we have Prince Charles playing polo. That's how you play polo. If you decide to go and play polo, you will find yourself mostly with people from the elites. The top elites. Of course, it's also very expensive, of course. Next slide, please. And here we have Royal Ascot races. It is every year there is horse racing at Ascot. And you can see these are members of the elite having a good time at Ascot. And you can see that they are dressed in a particular way. Si vous avez une casquette de baseball, on vous laisse pas entrer ce jour-là. Okay? You can see the top hats, very traditional idea. The only time you see a top hat in England normally is that sometimes people wear them when they get married. Even ordinary working people sometimes like to dress up like that in order to get married. Next, please. And of course, last year there was the royal wedding, which was an important social occasion for the elites. And here you have some pictures of them. You can see the man on the far right, then one of the princes in a red uniform. Petit conseil, si jamais vous allez à la guerre, ne portez pas un uniforme rouge. C'est bête, mais bon, le voilà. Very important, prestigious ceremony. It's 12:25, so I'm going to stop there for today, and next week I will talk to you about the wedding class. Thank you for listening.
J'arrive à la fin du fichier. Par contre, sur le blog, vous trouverez la version de l'année dernière. Il faut Essayez de rechercher LEA, quelque chose comme ça, parce que je les ai mis, bon, ou sinon, remontés jusqu'à cette date à peu près l'année dernière. Je les ai mis chaque année, mais c'est, ça va être mis à jour dans 4 semaines. Il y aurait un lien sur Internet pour les trucs.